Okay, well, this is the hour we're going to take your phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM with Brian Weiss. And, of course, Brian is one of the greatest persons that you'll ever find for past life regressions. Let me give you the phone numbers. West of the Rockies, 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller is 818-501-4721. The wild card line is 818-501-4109. And welcome back to Coast. We will take your calls in a moment. Dr. Brian Weiss with us. Miracles happen. The book's available now, Brian?
Yes, it is, George. People can get it through the normal means, Amazon or bookstores or Barnes & Noble.
Well, that's great. You know, there aren't many people who have devoted their careers the way you have to studying this. So let me ask you this, Brian. In your entire career, what one episode, what one patient, what story was there that just overwhelmed you and still does to this day?
There are a few. I've been doing it now for 30-some years, George, since Catherine, and that's the first one. So that was overwhelming to me because I was close-minded. I was skeptical, scientific, very left-brained, and her experiences were so profound, so detailed. Her symptoms disappeared, but I think because she was the first also, and because there was also other information about me, it took a lot to convince me. She believed in it before I did, because she was having the memories, she was having the past lives, her symptoms were disappearing, she knew, but I was watching her, observing her, and so it took more for me, and she told me about my father who had died, my first child, the son had died as a baby. She was getting medical information, giving that to me from the other side, and that was just shocking to me. I didn't believe in any of these things, and here it was being put right in front of my intellectual mind, my scientific brain, saying, look, you better adjust the way you see the world, because it wasn't very accurate. And over the years, there was another a woman who is a physicist, a very, very bright woman who had an incredible experience around the time of Jesus. It was 2,000 years ago, and her back was broken. She was a man. She was kicked savagely by Roman centurions and had a healing in that life 2,000 years ago. And she was part of a group I was teaching at Omega Institute in New York, training therapists and others to do this work. And in that room, 2,000 years later, her back problems that she had from in this life, they were secondary to cancer, to surgeries, to chemotherapy and radiation, disappeared. Her bones started resolving. She was in her 60s. Her hair was colored, but it would have been gray, except that it was colored. It started growing in black again, its original color. She had so many profound physiological changes, and that one was like another miracle to me. So I remember that case, and there are some others that were just so profound and so special that they just stay with me. Sometimes it's meeting a loved one on the other side. They'll be in this deep state, mm-hmm. and then the other person is there, and they're getting messages. And sometimes the messages are very pragmatic, like where a will is hidden or jewelry has been hidden, and then they go find it. So you know that this is not just imagination.
Where, when you look at the past lives, so many people think that they're from Atlantis. Why is that?
Well, I'm not sure why so many, but it could be because that was a very profound time, according to the people that I've worked with who have these memories. It was a time that was somewhat similar to the present time in certain ways, like there was a lot of technological achievement, and not always used for the best purposes, and possibly great destruction that came about because of the misuse of these technologies and energies. And so we've now sort of recreated some of the same issues where technology is running ahead of the perhaps the compassionate and spiritual part of people that would help us to use technology in a more useful and safer way. So I think we're kind of recreating the situation that may have existed thousands of years ago when those civilizations probably existed. And here we are again facing the music. Like, okay, did you really learn? And I think also that many of the people who perhaps lived then are back now. I remember working with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. She passed away a few years ago.
Oh, great, she was a giant.
A giant, near-death experiences and death and dying and the stages of grief. And she was interested in past lives. And I did a regression with her. And she went back and had a very, very interesting and powerful lifetime in Atlantis. It was one of the more profound stories I've had of that time. And she described in great detail what people misusing the scientific technology of the time. But it explained a lot the kind of work she was doing in this lifetime, and I think it had a profound effect on her. So I was very happy to do that. And then I remember Elizabeth's Atlantean lifetime. So I think that we're recreating the same scenes and drama that existed maybe 10 or 15 or 20, 30,000 years ago.
All right, to the phones now we go. We'll go to Hank in Albuquerque, New Mexico on the wildcard line. Go ahead, Hank. Thanks.
Hi, George. Hi, Dr. Weiss. I'm in my late 20s, and I've always felt like I was an old soul, and my great-grandparents and my grandparents have always kind of confirmed that along with other members in the community and friends. But I wanted to ask you, Dr. Weiss, I feel like as I grow and go into my late 20s, upcoming 30s, into my career, I've also been meeting, I feel like, at a higher rate, other old souls, more than I ever did when I was younger. And I felt very awkward because I think I was an old soul. I just felt like I never fit in. But I feel like I'm meeting specific other old souls that have come into my life, I think, for maybe a higher purpose. And I wanted to ask you, Dr. Weiss, what is the mission of old souls in this life, and what would be some advice that you could give to perhaps other younger old souls like myself as we progress in this life? Thank you.
Okay, Hank. I think that in my way, and I know that we can't explore this in great depth, and I don't know you that well, but to me, when people reach the age of 28, more or less, 29, 30, that's like finishing the first third of their lives.
Yeah.
there comes a kind of maturity and wisdom at that, and you can choose to be aware of it and tap into it or not, but around 28 to 30, this change does happen. You move into this second third of your life in a way. And you're being attracted to other people who have the vibration that you have, the energy that you have, some sort of pulling together to do the work. But it's very important that you trust your intuitions, that you use these techniques such as meditation or introspection or contemplation so that you can make wise decisions of the people that you connect with. Because you're going to be attracted to people whose energy is like yours, who other old souls, people who have been around. You're the teachers, and there's a lot that's going to fall to you as you enter this second third of your life. But exactly what the work will be, that will become clear to you as long as you can keep that kind of contemplative mind, that ability to have and trust insights and intuition, and then all the answers will come to you. It's not bad, it's good. You're attracting or being attracted to others of your same vibration to do this work, and it'll become more clear to you with a little more time.
Brian, with what you do, there's a passion behind it. What keeps driving you?
I think in this work, George, I really believe what I'm finding. I'm finding that we're here to learn, to teach, to help others. And that's what we take with us, that When we die, we don't take our houses and our cars and our bank accounts. We take our knowledge, our wisdom, how we've lived, how we've helped others. I think that's why we're really here. So that becomes a passion to me. I mean, I think of people like Mother Teresa and Gandhi and others. They have the passion, too, for their work because they really believe that's why they were here, to help others, to help humankind. And I think that's why we're all here. So that's what drives me the most, because I know that that's why I'm here, too. That's why Hank is here. That's why you're here. I mean, you're passionate about your work, which is spreading knowledge and wisdom to millions of people through media, through radio and other, your books and in other ways. It's all the same passion, George. I think I just share the same commitment that you do.
Let's go to John in Sacramento, California now. John, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is, how can you tell if you and your wife met in a past life?
Well, the surest way to tell is if you had a regression and you found the past lives. And I've done that. I sometimes have worked with couples and working with them at the same time. And they sometimes both remember the same past life, which is very powerful when it happens. I did write a book. It's called Only Love is Real. It's about soulmates. And it talks about, you know, how you can find out what your past lives were together. Sometimes it's just having that sense of familiarity, of knowing each other at a level, deeper level, even earlier than you would have expected, being comfortable, being familiar, that kind of thing. There are other ways like deja vus that may give you clues, but the surest way is to have a regression, and then you'll find out which lifetimes that you were together.
The connection between people in dream states. I've heard incredible stories, Brian, where somebody will dream of somebody and then meet them, and they had, the other person, the same kind of dream. How does that happen?
Well, I think in the dream state, the usual barriers are lesser. The cognitive barriers, our everyday brain and thinking, is reduced. So in dreams, lots of psychic and intuitive processes can occur. That's when people sometimes dream of the future, and it seems to happen. Those are called precognitive dreams. So I remember one couple that I was seeing, and a younger couple, and the wife was pregnant, and they were sleeping, and both had the same dream where the baby came to them in the dream and said, I want you to name me, I forget the name, but she gave the name, and they both, and other information too, and they both woke up and had the same dream, and the same description of the child, and then they had the daughter, it was a daughter. So people share dreams, they connect to others through dreams, they have precognitive dreams. There's a whole field called lucid dreaming where the usual barriers are really reduced and people can have experiences at a distance or even control the dream. It's such a fruitful and fascinating topic, dreams, and all of these things are possible.
Let's go to Bill in Porter, Texas now. Hi, Bill. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Good morning, fellow Gemini. How are y'all today?
We are fine. Thank you.
I had a kind of a sensation when I was young. We're talking about 9 or 10 years old. And it was kind of creepy at the time. I've never really told anybody else because it was a little bit embarrassing. But I thought that I remembered what it felt like to be somebody else. And it was a girl of some kind. But it was just those feelings. And it lasted only for a couple of years. And only for, you know, while I was like going to bed before I went to sleep, you know, I'd have those little feelings kind of creep in. But you said something toward the start of the show that inspired me to call. You said that you thought people were envisioned and viewed with complete souls when you're born or something like that. I've come to a conclusion, and of course I don't have any real evidence about this. It's just, you know, observation and listening. Is that the reason we're here, the reason God put us on here, our bodies grow souls, is to mature them and become somebody. And to illustrate my point, are you familiar with the Borg on Star Trek?
I am, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? It's like when they assimilate somebody, their memories and their experiences suddenly become part of this large collection, almost like a single being. And I think when you die, your soul, most souls, will go to that being and become part of it. And its character is shaped a little bit by the collective, you know, memories and experiences and characters of the people it's made of. And it may not be that there's only one, there may be more. And, you know, different kinds of people may be attracted to, you know, a different kind of being. It's just how, what you're attracted to. I know this is a little bit all off the deep end, but I really kind of, you know, it, when I came to this conclusion, it made me feel a lot better, almost as if I was onto something. But anyway, that's what I had to
All right, let's get Brian's reaction to some of that. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, I don't think Bill needs to worry about that. That is so unusual. It's not that unusual. I had two thoughts listening to Bill. One was we've all had many lifetimes in other the other sex, male, female, different religions, different nationalities, because we have to learn from all sides. So if Bill had a lifetime as a woman in the 1500s or 1700s, that could, his just kind of getting flashes of that when he was 9 or 10 could be kind of a spontaneous bleeding through of a past life memory. So that's a very real possibility. And again, having a regression would get more details of when that was and who it was in that lifetime as a woman. We've all had lifetimes as both sexes and other nationalities. The other thing that Bill is describing is a kind of a concept of the oversoul. These families of souls, maybe we're all kind of connected to an oversoul type of thing. The writer Jane Roberts wrote about this years and years ago, too. And there's some, you know, a lot of people talk about that. It's very interesting work. And I think Bill is kind of talking about that same concept, too. And that at some level, as we were talking about in the beginning, perhaps there's just one. It's like, but we get more individualized or differentiated as we go down and eventually come into a human body. But maybe at a higher level, a higher plane, there's just one, or all souls are connected, or there's this oversoul, Bill's oversoul, comprised of his family of souls that would be male and female and many souls in his little family of souls, and that's called an oversoul. So I think he could also be kind of tapping into that wisdom, and maybe he knows much more. And once again, you know, to have regressions or to meditate a bit and to contemplate, to read, to explore this, what Bill's describing is not so rare. Lots of people, when they were children, had past life memories. Often it's even earlier than what Bill described. It could be 3 or 4 or 2. And they'll talk about to their parents sometimes, when I was big, I was, you know, I was your father, or, and they'll give information and details. And there's been some interesting research, Dr. Ian Stevenson from the University of Virginia and others who have studied children. Carol Bowman is another researcher, children who have had past life memories, and they've explored that and validated many cases. And I think maybe Bill was experiencing some of that kind of recollection.
Well, yeah, these stories of children having past lives is absolutely riveting. The little boy from Chicago thought he was a World War II pilot, and he indeed, I think he was.
Meininger, yeah, that was a fabulous story. Those kinds of stories are great.
Bruce, we're going to come back in a moment. We're going to take final phone calls with you as we talk with Dr. Bruce Weiss. Miracles happen on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Dr. Brian Weiss with us. We're talking about his work, Miracles Happen. Brian, how do we know that there's some kind of, that there might be a quirk in the brain that allows people to think that they've had past lives?
Well, we don't know exactly where the memories come from or where they're stored in the brain. But what's interesting is when people have these past lives, these memories, that physical symptoms can be really helped, emotional symptoms, people are validated in one way or another. So wherever it's coming from, we're still validating the memories. People don't know. Perhaps we stimulate, and there was some research in Canada, Wilder, Penfield, and others, stimulating part of the right temporal lobe and eliciting past life memories. So it's very complex, that part, and yet people are validating that the memories are real. They're more than metaphor or symbol or imagination or fantasy. They can be validated. So we don't know exactly where in the brain they're stored, or around the brain, or in the energy field around the body. This is where research is going on presently. But we know that the memories themselves are very real.
Now, the multiverse theory. Lots of people believe that it is. There are some scientists who say no. Where is Brian Weiss with that?
Well, it depends a little bit on what you mean by multiverse. I think there are many, many universes that in a way, modern physics is so fascinating today. It talks about in cosmology of universes just bubbling up. The vastness of it is beyond our conception. And we grapple with timelessness, with what existed before there was time, or maybe there is no time. These are such complex processes. But I think we just, there's probably a level to our wisdom and knowledge and understanding where we max out. And that beyond that level, there still exists knowledge and wisdom, but we can't really tap into it with our brains at the moment. And I think that there is a multiplicity of universes, when I hear multiverse, people mean different things by it. So it would depend what you mean by that, George.
Well, you know, like many universes connected to each other like bubbles.
Yeah, I think that's what physicists are writing about now. And that if there are an infinity of universes, they're just bubbling up. But a universe is so vast. What does that even mean? It's incomprehensible. And if there is indeed an infinity of universes, then there's an infinity of futures. And we exist in all of those. And it gets very complicated. And I come back to this plane and say, wow, there's so much more to us than we don't understand. So in my way of thinking, I think of ourselves as spiritual beings. We're connected to all beings, all wisdom, all energies, in all of the universes, in the entire multiverse. We're part of that too. And if we were able to expand our consciousness out in a kind of holographic way, we would connect to everything in all of the universes. But it's difficult to do that. So I think if we think of ourselves as immortal, eternal, as spiritual beings, or as multiverse beings, not just confined or limited to a physical body or brain, we'll have a more accurate conception of who we really are, spiritual beings, not human beings.
Let's go to our wrestler in New Braunfels, Texas. Hey, Ross, go ahead.
Yes, sir. I was, a short story here. I was born in 1975, and I guess it was around my freshman year in high school. I started having flashbacks to Vietnam, and my teacher told me to write about it, so I wrote about it and made up this poem and all that. And I asked my parents about it, and they're like, what are you talking about? I said, I have flashbacks to Vietnam. Of course, we're Christian, and that's never been a issue in our whole existence, is there's reincarnation. So I started doing some research and trying to figure out where maybe that I came from. And the thing was, when I started looking at Walter Lant's book, and he had a group of kids back in the 60s, and one of them looked almost identical to me. And then I started doing some research on that kid, and he died in like 1974 in Vietnam. And it was crazy that suddenly I realized maybe I was there. Maybe I had some kind of connection to that. So I started talking to my parents, and, of course, they were like, no, you're just full of BS. And I'm like, well, how do I know so much about Vietnam when I've never been there? So I was kind of curious.
Okay, let's get a take from you, Dr. Brian Weiss, on what Rossler was going through.
Right. I, this is a very classical kind of experience. We've had this a lot. I know that you were born Christian in this life, but what if you were born in China or Japan or even Vietnam? Then you would be open to these concepts, and your parents wouldn't be saying that's silly or that doesn't make sense, because that's how I was. I was very skeptical, and then I found out, wow, there really is much more to it. So it could be, well, you know, you're having these memories, and I've had similar cases over the years of people who died in World War II or the Korean War or Vietnam, and they describe the soldiers, sometimes with great identifying details, and then they find out that did happen, that did exist, a person with that name or that characteristic or that dog tag number or whatever it was who died in that way, that did exist. And so it could really be that you were that soldier who died in 1974 and was reincarnated as a baby in 1975. That would fit too. It would be very interesting if then more research, and I don't know what's possible, you found out, well, how did he die? Was it in a fire or explosion or a bullet or fall or some airplane crash in some other way? And then you see, well, do I have a symptom in this life? Like I had a person who died in World War I in an airplane crash into the English Channel, and in this life he had a fear of airplanes and of water, and that disappeared when he had that memory. So you would see, okay, is the trauma around the death in that Vietnam lifetime connected to some symptom you have in this lifetime? And that would be another validating detail. So that's how we look into these cases and research them. We look for, and of course, then having the regression is the more definitive thing. But he's been having flashbacks, and that's how these past life like deja vu type things. Another thing you could do, which is more difficult, is to go there and see if you have deja vu feelings. Sometimes the geographical closeness, that resonance, brings the memory back even more with even more detail. So those are just some techniques.
Brian, did you track the story of the little boy in the West Bank in Israel? And he had told his parents repeatedly that somebody had killed him with an axe to the head. Mm-hmm. He had a birthmark scar-type look through his head. It looked just like you were hit with an axe. Well, apparently the custom there is if a little kid talks about this, you take him to a specialist, and they took him to a specialist who deals with this, maybe somebody like you, and he indeed told them that he was killed by someone with an axe to the head. He took them to the site where his bones were buried, and they were there.
Right.
And
right.
Then he said, I need to take you to the place of where the person who killed me lives. They confronted a guy at a place, at a house, and the guy denied it until they said, we found the bones and the axe that you used, and he broke down and confessed.
Wow.
Amazing.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's how it works. Or what we talked about earlier, George, the little boy with the World War II and the airplane in the Pacific.
Yeah.
Leininger, that one, which was great. And then he recognized the people, you know, who some of whom were still alive.
Oh, yeah. They took him to a reunion, and he saw all his World War II buddies.
Right.
And it was a little kid.
Yeah. I mean, and that kind of thing. So out of the mouths of children. And I think that's this Vietnam story fits into that, too. That's how it works.
Okay,
so
let's go to...
So compelling when they're children.
Let's go to Ricky in Honolulu, Hawaii. Hey, Ricky, go ahead.
Hi there. Aloha, Dr. Weiss. I have two questions, and I'll ask them quickly in the interest of time. The first one is more logistics. I live so far away from where you live in the Florida area. How can someone like me tap into the value in a cost-effective way, the value of getting into past life regression? You know, can we hire you? Do we read books? Whatever. That's the first question. And then the second question is very different. When I was born in 1951 until I got in my mid-20s, almost every single day of my life that I can remember anyway, way back then, I would see a cave woman, and I always knew intuitively that I lived her life, but I didn't talk to anybody about it in my early years because I didn't want anybody to think I was crazy. But I saw where she lived. I knew everything about her life. And then my point is, when I got into around my early to mid 20s, that I don't know what you call it, the awareness of that. The awareness remained, but the pictures of her stopped. I mean, I can draw on the pictures now as a distant memory, but my entire, all my childhood, my adolescence into my early 20s, it was like she was with me. And I always felt intuitively that that was a past life of mine. So I was wondering what your response was to those two very different questions.
Well, they're somewhat connected too, Ricky. That's again how it works. The second one, oftentimes it does go underground earlier, like the children who have memories. But when they get to be 5 or 6, it will kind of fade away and go underground. They learn not to talk about it, just as you knew, because people poo-poo it or say negative things. But those are how past life memories work. Now, I have CDs that I mentioned my patients use and others use. You can get them through Amazon or in different ways and practice with that. They're very safe, and that's very cost-effective. Then there are therapists who practice all over the world. I train them, psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers, mental health technicians, and therapists who practice regression therapy. I know in Honolulu there are some good ones. And you just have to put in Google, like, past life regression therapist or past life therapist, and you'll get their names coming up. I know in Honolulu I gave a workshop there last year, and we had some really good therapists there and some that I've trained. So you don't have to look far. You can do the CD. You can go to a therapist. This is up to you, but it's not that difficult to confirm the memories. And then the picture will get much more clear again.
Thanks, Ricky. What do you think of self-hypnosis, Brian?
It's all self-hypnosis, George. It's just the going within. It's the concentration. So really, all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. The therapist may guide you in it, but you have to do it yourself. It's the focusing of the concentration. And it's very safe. Nothing happens. There are these myths that, maybe your soul separates, but it doesn't. It's just concentration, like reading a book, going to the movies, focusing. And so it's very, very safe.
All right, let's go to Jeff in St. Louis now. Jeffrey, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I wanted to say Semper Fi and Anchors Away, because I was a Navy corpsman, so I was kind of a Gemini, too.
All right.
Anyway, My question is about large groups of people. 1977, 107 people of us were all together at Alma College for a training exercise where we learned acting, dancing, and singing. Well, more than one person started having deja vu experiences. Like they walk up to somebody and say, hey, I've seen you before. None of these people have ever met each other ever before in their whole lives, okay? But the deja vu experiences were so heavy that they were walking up to all these totally different strangers when we were in between our different study periods, that they said, I know you. Where have I known you from? And then they'd start talking. And they'd say, no, I never seen him before. Well, we got all, during this two-week thing at the college, Alma College in Michigan, we all got together so seriously connected, and we all started having, even our counselors and the teachers and everybody started having deja vu experiences. It was really, really strange. Well, this went on, and then after the 2 weeks, we all split up into our own different regions, 7 different regions. And we got back together, did one final show for, you know, the major people that contributed the money or something, whatever. But when we all tried to say goodbye to get back on our buses to leave, it took us 3.5 hours to try to say goodbye, and everybody was crying. No, not a tear, dry person's tear in anybody's eye. They were all crying. And they acted like they were being ripped away from these people. All of us were that way. My older brother was with me, and my younger brother was with me, but it's like they were so distraught. My older brother is one of these tough guys, you know, he doesn't, you know, believe in crying or nothing. Like, he was pounding like a baby. And I mean, their connections were so serious, and then the people looked familiar. And I went up to at least 10 or 12 different people that I seen connection there, you know. And wow. I just wondered if it, about large groups like that, that had to have been, I think, a reincarnation experience, like we were all together once before, maybe. What do you think?
Yeah, I would call that a reunion. Sounds like your group got together, had this reunion, and it was very intense. That's not that common, where people are that tuned in, that they were having so many deja vu, that feeling of familiarity that you've met before, it happened before. Lots of people have experienced that, but for so many people in the group to experience it at the same time, it'd be that intense where you emotionally distraught to be separated, that had to be a great reunion. And I think that can be connected to past lives too. How else can you explain that kind of connection in such a short period of time?
That's a great story. How far back, you mentioned the person 4,000 years ago. How far back has somebody gone that you can remember, Brian?
Well, certainly when you look at the Atlantis things and those times, it's going back 20, 30,000 years. But some are really, really primitive, like caves and icy conditions. And we know humans have been around for whatever, 200,000, 300,000 years. So I would say all the way back to the beginnings of human existence on the Earth. Yeah.
Wow. Has anybody ever said they were the reincarnated Adam or Eve?
No, I haven't had that. That would
be a trip.
That would be something, right? More they go into these, like, not Neanderthal type of things, way, way back in time.
How about Jesus? Did they ever say that?
I have a lot of people who seem to have been alive at that time who were connected. Not so many that say they were Jesus, but they were there at the time, or they feel a sense of loss. From that time, that was a very powerful moment in the history of this world, and a lot of people who incarnated at that time and feel the sense of loss that happened with the death and crucifixion. So, not so many who say they were Jesus, but who witnessed it or who were there around that time.
Brian, you're always invited on Coast to Coast. Dr. Brian Weiss, Miracles Happen, up next. We're going monster hunting with Linda Godfrey on Coast to Coast AM.